Roundtable on Crick Info Talk.
Hi, this is Tony Gregg. Welcome to the Crick Info Roundtable. Is modern-day cricket tending towards the robotic to the detriment of the game? Are on-field displays of passion and naked aggression being increasingly curtailed by the match referees? Has this policing policy become more strict? Is it necessary? Is the crowd appeal of the colourful characters, those who play the game with aggression, still there? What do these characters bring to the game? How has the game been enriched by the presence of these cricketers? How important is it for such characters to be encouraged in order to ensure that cricket retains its unpredictable elements? These are some of the issues we have asked our guests to address today. We have with us Ian Chappell, former captain of Australia. How are you, Ian?
Good, thanks, Tony.
We also have former England batsman and coach David Lloyd. Welcome, David.
Thanks, Ricky.
Right, first of all, a question to both of you. Are there still as many characters in the game as there used to be? David?
I don't think there are as many. I think it's got a little bit cruder than it used to be, if you like. And if you look at a character, I think there's one that comes to mind straight away, and I've just seen him, and I think he's a good character, and that's Sri Sant of India. He's a real character, but the other thing is that he can bowl. I think the main thing about a character is, can he perform? It's no point being a character if you can't perform. And I spotlight him straight away, but match referees, as you just mentioned, are clamping down on crude behaviour. And I don't think anybody wants to see that.
Ian, your thoughts?
Well, yeah, I mean, every era they talk about there are less characters in the game. I think with the contract situation where you've got basically everybody now playing international cricket as a professional, and he has to sign a contract with his board, and there's so many stipulations, plus you've got sponsors and so on to keep happy, I think that in itself has a bit of a dampening effect on people's character. I think the nature of the game has changed off the field, and I think that's where a lot of the characters were built up in their deeds off the field. You know, if you're thinking of guys like Keith Miller and Doug Walters, are a couple that come to mind. I mean, they could both play. They were both very, very good players, but part of their character was built up off the field, and I don't think that opportunity is there now for the modern-day player, and you quote the example of Freddie Flintoff at the World Cup. You know, the guy goes out to have a couple of beers and he gets reported by his own supporters. So I think that part of the game, you know, that has chopped away a lot of the characters. Also, I think characters are quite often made by the media. I mean, we had one player in my time in the Australian side who was perceived as a great character publicly by the media, but we in the team didn't think of him as a great character. So, you know, I think a lot of it is the perception that comes from the media.
David, what about the match referee and what he brings to the game? Is he stifling the so-called colourful characters?
Well, it does, definitely, but I suppose there's a need, because in this modern day, the match referee gets involved to uphold the spirit of the game. And I think we all agree that that needs to be done. And if behaviour gets out of hand, and I think it's more confrontational now, especially with so many cameras, and there isn't a hiding place for a bit of banter, and there's always been banter, and, you know, a lot of words have been said about sledging. Banter is a great word. I think it's much better, and there's always been that. But if it gets vindictive and gets nasty, and now we've got stump microphones, that's when a match referee gets involved in that side of what he does. There's no doubt that a match referee will stifle the inner character of an individual player. And I agree with Ian entirely when he talks about the media and especially mobile telephones, and with a player like Andrew Flintoff, who is shocked, if you like, by his own supporters on a mobile telephone looking to make a quick buck by selling a bit of a story to a national newspaper, which then gets blown out of all proportion. And just to tell you that it's a great story, he wasn't on the pedalo. Number one, he wasn't on the pedalo, but pedalo sounds much better than canoe-alo.
Certainly does, yeah. Ian, your thoughts on the attitude of the umpires and match referees now by comparison with when you were playing?
Well, I think the big difference for me is that, I think anything that's happening on the field is best judged by the guys who are on the field, in other words, the umpires. because they know what the build-up has been. They know who's the instigator and who's the retaliator, for instance. So I think it's a much better situation that they are handling that rather than it's being done from off the field. And the second thing is, I believe that when I was playing, any problems were sorted out amongst the players on the field. If someone was getting out of hand, he was generally sorted out either by the opposition or sometimes even by his own teammate. And I don't think that the players take the law into their own hands now the way that it was done. And I don't necessarily think that that's a good thing, because, for instance, if I'm batting and somebody's shooting his mouth off and having a lot to say, there's no way I'm going to face up. I'm going to make a song and dance about it, let the umpire know that I'm annoyed, so that hopefully the umpire will do something about it. If the umpire doesn't, then I'm going to take the law into my own hands and I'm going to do something about it. I reckon in the last 10 years I've seen two that I can think of, maybe three times when I've seen a batsman pull away and let it be known that he's not happy with what going on out there. So I think that's one area where it has changed a lot, that most of the things were sorted out between the players, and if an umpire could see that it was starting to get a bit out of hand, then they would step in and generally use the captain, which is, I think, the best way to go and say, look, mate, it says in the laws of cricket that you're in charge of your team. Now, you've lost, in my opinion, you've lost control of your team. Now, you'd better get it back or otherwise there's going to be a problem. And generally, I think that's the best way to sort things out.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. Look, just one other thing, while you're talking about some of your characters, you had some great characters in your team, all very different characters. I mean, Lilly, Walters and Thompson, I think we could probably describe them all in their own right as characters, but different. Could you talk us through those three?
Yeah, I'd add Marsh to that list as well. You know, Walters was certainly perceived in the media as a character because, you know, he would stay up late and he would drink and he'd smoke. And I think the public took to Doug Walters because a lot of the guys who were sitting there watching the cricket are Saturday afternoon park cricketers themselves. And that's how they play the game. You know, quite often they'll be at fine leg with a beer behind them and a fag in the grass. And I think they looked at Doug and thought, well, he's just like us, except he plays a bit better. But the other thing that Doug brought to our team was, with his at times rather weird sense of humour, he kept us very loose. And I think that's terribly important. I think if you throw on a generation or two, Merv Hughes did the same thing for the Australian side. You know, he was classed as a huge pest in the side. That was his way of keeping guys loose. And I think that those sort of characters in a team are worth, you know, they're worth a hell of a lot. Dennis was a bit like Shane Warne in that, you know, when he would appeal, it was theatrical. And a lot of the crowd loved to see Warne and Lilly appeal. That was part of the reason for going along to watch the cricket. That sort of didn't mean much to us as players, but what meant a lot to the team with Dennis Lilly was that, you know, Dennis Lilly, when he walked onto the field, he always thought he could win, and that helped us believe that we could win as well. And he was always the last guy to think that the game couldn't be won. So that was the big thing that he had for us. Tomo, well, I guess the last part of Tomo's character is it's better to have him on your side than having to be facing him. And I think that was the big advantage Tomo had. But Tomo also is a very honest, straight to the point sort of character, and a lot of the times I think he made you laugh without really trying to be funny. Because he had this very homespun philosophy on a lot of things, he was another one who kept you loose. Rodney Marsh, great character. He was a good thinker on the game. He could do his share of drinking when he decided to. But again, the humour part of it, I think, was very important with Rod. And I'll go back to the point that Bumble made right at the start. The important thing with a character is you can afford to be funny if you can play well. And what you've got then is the team laughing with you. But if you're a clown and you're not playing very well, then what you'll find is you've got a team that's laughing at you.
Certainly had a few blokes that could play well in Lilly, Walters, Marsh and Thompson. David, England have produced their fair share of these characters. Would you like to highlight a few for us?
Fred Truman was probably the first character. He was absolutely magnificent and stayed that way throughout his career as a broadcaster. And then you come on to players, and the guy you played with, he made everybody laugh, Derek Randall. I mean, what a character he was, but he could play, and the way that he kept the dressing room, and he was a fidget, he was a jack-in-a-box, he never stopped talking, and another character. And coming right up to present day, I firmly believe that Flintoff is a great character, in a different sense, that he's really a man of the people. He's such a caring chap and a colossus. He's a big man, Andrew Flintoff. But he gets people on his side. And as Ian's just said, people identify with Andrew Flintoff. And he's got a word for everybody. He's so patient. And people see a character. And he's such an affectionate character. So there are two or three from England. I'll also mention another from the opposition, if you like. I thought that Arjuna Ranatunga was a magnificent character for Sri Lanka. You know, he gelled and welded that team, and he had a real presence on the field that you actually, when you were against him, you hated the chap. But when you get to know him, you know what he was standing for, and he stood out as a character. So we, as players, like characters in our side, but you identify also with characters from the opposition. And the same with Geoff Thompson, was so straight, it was untrue, and made everybody laugh. You didn't laugh so much, did you, Greggy, when you were 22 yards away? But he was a terrific character.
Certainly was. I suppose this whole business of aggression is an issue we should just talk about briefly. Where, for example, is the line? Where do you draw the line in respect of the whole business of aggression versus, if you like, well, the other side, the opposite of aggression? Take, for example, in the Lily Meandad coming together at in Perth, I think it was. Was the line crossed there?
Oh, most definitely, and Dennis got suspended for it. And he, as much as my brother doesn't agree with me still after all these years, Dennis was the instigator. I mean, I think it's pretty simple. And if you just follow the laws, to me it's very simple. You've got two categories, well, maybe there's a third category has come into it, but you've got gamesmanship and you've got abuse on the field. I think inane chatter has come into it now, and I'd like to see that eradicated, not just for the sake of the problems it creates on the field, but for my sanity as a broadcaster, because it drives me bloody mad having to listen to it. But you've got gamesmanship, which is fine, been a part of the game from day one, and I think it's also contributed greatly to the humour of cricket, and there are many, many books that have been written on the humour of cricket. And then you've got abuse, and that is not part of the game. And, you know, I spoke before about the umpire stepping in, if he has to, use the captain to get the thing sorted out. Then, obviously, you know, aggression, you know it's definitely gone too far when you get somebody putting their hand on an opponent or touching an umpire, God forbid. You know, that is going too far. And this has always been my problem with the amount of chatter that is now allowed on the field. I believe that the more that you allow, the more likelihood there is that someone will say something personal. And if it's said at the wrong moment, then you will have some fisticuffs on the field, and then you've got a major problem. And, you know, I think we saw, and even, I think probably Adam Gilchrist summed it up best, the game the other day with Australia and India, where he said there were some things on the field on the aggressive side of it that were really good. And he said there were a couple of things that happened that I'd have been cranky if it was my young son in the backyard doing it, and I would have told him off. If you go back to that semi-final between Australia and India in Durban, I don't think I've seen more aggressive and better cricket for 40 overs than I saw in that T20 semi-final. The game was just buzzing from ball number one, and I don't think that anybody went over the line there. It was a terrific game of cricket. It was a terrific advertisement for the game. It was a terrific advertisement for that format. But you know, if you're going to get situations, and I guess Andrew Simons was doing, in essence, what I was talking about earlier. He was taking the law into his own hands when he stepped in and tried to protect Brad Haddin when he felt that Srisanth was going over the top. I mean, Srisanth is a slow learner. He's been pinged a few times. He could well finish his career with a bank balance exactly the same as it was when he started his career, if he keeps going the way he is.
One of the game's best-known characters, David, has been Ian Botham, legendary all-rounder, very aggressive on the field, banned for smoking cannabis, I think it was. His life has seen it all. What was it that made Botham such a special character?
Well, number one, he could play cricket. I think that's the first thing to be said. He could play cricket. He was unbelievably confident about his own ability, as you know. Now, as a lifestyle, you choose your lifestyle. Now, the lifestyle that he chose as a player and latterly as an individual, as a commentator and as a private person, if you like, is his choice. Now, it's not everybody's choice. But again, he becomes a larger than life character. He's almost a dynasty, if you like. And the way that you choose your lifestyle is very much down to you. It's not everybody's taste, and it's certainly not my taste. But you can tell that that type of character is easily identified by the public. But I admire Ian Botham as a terrific cricketer and a great competitor, I would say.
Ian, the other name that springs to mind, the Aussie Shane Warne, is right up there with the great characters of all time. Can you just dwell on him for a little bit for us?
Well, I think the thing that made Warne a character on the field was that he was himself. He didn't try to be something that he wasn't. He's very passionate about playing cricket, and that came out when he was on the field. You know, I think the appealing, it had a theatrical side to it, but I still think that was part of Shane Warne, that he, and I guess as a leg spinner, if you strive to beat somebody mentally, and sometimes you might have a plan that you've got to work on for 8-10 overs as a spinner, and when it finally materialises, you can understand the guy getting very excited about it, and consequently you had that theatrical type appeal. But I think that was the thing with Warne. Warne had the ability to polarise people, and I think you could almost categorise it as loved by most of the males, certainly in Australia, and not liked all that much by a lot of the females. And, you know, that was to do with the off-field activity. But I think, you know, the guys who went along to the cricket to watch Shane Warne, they admired his skill, and I think they admired the fact that he was just being himself out on the cricket field. And once again, I think, you know, there was a lot of photos of Warne caught smoking cigarettes and things like that. Once again, I think there was that appeal from the guys who play Saturday afternoon cricket, thinking, well, you know, Warne's just like us. He loves going out, having a smoke, playing cricket. That's like us, except that he bowls a hell of a lot better.
He does. We've mentioned Javed Miandad. David, just staying with the Pakistanis, one of the true bad boys of the game at the moment, Shoaib Akhtar. He seems to be living too much of his life in the fast lane, and his cricket has been affected adversely. Do you think that such cricketers do, well, I suppose in his case, more harm to themselves than good?
Yeah, I think it's a great pity about Shoaib, and I would say that I'm on the outside looking in, but it would appear that he's just wasting his talent. Very talented, unbelievably quick, and everybody loves watching fast express bowlers, of which he is, but he would appear, as I say, from the outside looking in, just to have lost his way. He's confrontational with his own teammates, which has spilled over into the public domain, and that's not what they want either. And I just find it real sad that he is out of cricket at the minute for all sorts of reasons, and has been for about 18 months. And somebody really, I don't know, somebody like Javed or an elder statesman to get hold of him and say, listen, you're just wasting your time here. You're wasting your talent, and this is how you're going to be remembered instead of one of the great fast bowlers.
What about one for both of you here? Any advice for the ICC in respect of the instruction they should be giving to the umpires and match referees going forward, in so much as it relates to making sure that we continue to see these great characters on the field?
I mean, firstly, it's a matter of who from the ICC is going to give this advice, because there's a lot of people at the ICC who don't know enough about cricket to be giving that sort of advice. You know, for instance, if you're talking pretty well all the umpires from England, they've all played first-class cricket, they've all had experience on the field, and I wouldn't want somebody who hasn't had a lot of experience on the field telling an English umpire, for instance, the way he should be running the game out on the field, because he'll know a hell of a lot better. You know, so I think, as I said before, that the laws really, if you follow the laws in regard to this situation, you won't have much trouble, and you don't need any advice from the ICC. And, you know, the good umpire, so Dickie Bird, for instance, is one who comes to mind immediately. Dickie Bird understood Dennis Lilly very well, and that's why he handled him perfectly. And he could tell when Dennis Lilly was getting, you know, the steam was starting to come out of his ears and he might become a problem. And Dickie Bird would say something that was humorous and make Dennis laugh, and boom, suddenly the whole situation was diffused. With good umpires, I wouldn't like them to be told a hell of a lot. I'd just say, just go for your life. You run the game the way you see, because I think the good umpires will run it properly. If you've got to start telling the umpires how to run the game, then I think you've chosen the wrong umpire.
David?
Yeah, I agree entirely in that the laws of the game are there and they're pretty foolproof, and umpires on the field should be able to put the laws into operation. Now, sometimes they're not allowed to put the law into operation, but with regard to character, if people are allowed to be themselves and it's all natural, the most of it will be fine. But an umpire has a sixth sense when he knows things are getting out of hand and should be able to handle that on the field without interference with the laws of the game from people higher up.
Right, just finally then, one for each of you. If you were to be given the opportunity to say, right, let's have this cricketer back in the game for a little while. Is there anyone that sort of stands out that you would say, right, wouldn't it be great to have or Shane Warne for another 10 years or a Keith Miller or somebody? Does anyone stand out?
Fred Truman. Absolutely box office, Fred. The first to 300 wickets, and he did it in about 67 test matches. Fred was a rare talent, one of the best we've ever seen. A great raconteur, a wonderful storyteller, and out in the middle, I played against him. He was an absolute hoot. Now that's what I call a character.
Well, for me, Tony, the guy that I've always wished that I'd had the opportunity to meet was the big ship, Warwick Armstrong. Warwick Armstrong was a very successful Australian captain. He, as his nickname suggests, by the end of his career, he'd become a very, very big man. He was, I think, up around about 20 stone when he captained Australia. But he was a good cricketer. If you look at his record, he was a more than useful leg spin bowler and a very good middle-order batsman. But it was, you know, it was his approach to the game, and he was one who took on the administration. He's probably one of the rare cricketers who actually took on the administration, and he beat them pretty well every time. And to the point where they had a protest march when Warwick Armstrong was dropped from the Victorian side to play against the MCC, and they all marched to the MCG with these placards saying "Bring back the big ship." So he was very much loved by the public and hated by the administrators. And he's one guy that I would have liked to see him play, and I would have liked to have met him.
Right, well, there we are, Fred Truman and the big ship. We need more of them. Or those like them. Well, gentlemen, that's it. Thank you so much for your time today. It's been a pleasure chatting to you.
Thanks a lot, Greggy.
Tony Gregg was a good character as well.
This is Crick Info Talk.